I declare the meeting open at 2 minutes past four. Can I ask that we stand for the council prayer, but we can stay seated. Lord, we humbly beseech thee to vouchsafe thy blessing on this council, direct and prosper its deliberations for the advancement of this area and the true welfare of its people. I would also like to acknowledge the Wangal people who are the traditional custodians of this land, and I would also like to pay my respect to the elders, both past and present, of the Wangal Nation, and extend that respect to other Aboriginals present. Can I just remind councillors and members of the gallery that these meetings are recorded for the purpose of assisting with the preparation of minutes and promoting meeting transparency. Such recordings are subject to the provisions of the Government Information Act and are promptly made available for public review via the council website. I note apologies, leave of absence. I haven't got any apologies. I might just wait. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure Councillor Del Duca said he was coming on, so he hasn't logged on just yet. Might come back to that if we need to before we start the agenda. Declarations of political donations. Note there's no declarations. We have a confirmation of minutes. If we can, it's been moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Furno Cook. The minutes of Tuesday, 28th of July, 2020 be adopted. Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried. We have one speaker on an item, which is with regards to the local traffic committee item at 17 to 23 Croydon Avenue, Croydon, and it's Mr. Jim Walsh. G'day, Jim. I know you're there.
I'm in. Thank you. Yes. Hi, John.
Jim, I'm going to just quickly read the meeting protocols, and then ask you to go for your 3 minutes. So you have a 3 minute time limit.
Thank you.
Discussion, debate, or questions involving councillors or staff is not permitted. The subject matter only is to be discussed, and personalities are not to be addressed. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Go for it, Jim.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to say something. Just four things, really. One, that the no parking areas that we currently have in Croydon Avenue and Brighton Street are obviously for safety measures, the safety of both our residents and our visitors leaving the area. And number two, the Brighton Retirement Village has underground parking for residents, so residents do not park in the on the road. And there is also adequate underground parking for visitors, so they don't need to park on the road. And also, just a final point, is that there's a similar area of no parking in Croydon Avenue, which is for 13 units at number 31 to 35, and there's also a space there which for safety. So we're not alone in asking for and receiving the no parking space. So that's all I really want to add to the other things that have been said before. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Okay, we might proceed with the Merrill Minute. So there's a Merrill Minute for Board Council's position on racism. Has everyone got a copy of the Merrill Minute? Does everyone want me to read quickly through the Merrill Minute, or do you want me to just address the actual minute itself? So one, that council adopts a stance against or opposing all forms of racism, including the growing incidents occurring during the COVID-19 pandemic. Two, that the general manager implements a communication strategy that promotes positive messages in relation to the value of multiculturalism, harmony and diversity. Three, that the GM continues to research the extent and impacts of racism locally through the appropriate sources, including the council's multicultural advisory committee. Four, that the general manager implements any current projects and activities and reports back to council in 3 months on additional projects and activities that can help to reduce racism and enhance community inclusiveness and belonging. Five, Council actively promotes the different means available to the local community to report any incidents of racism. And six, council develops a statement opposing all forms of racism with input from the MAC and other key cultural groups, which is a multicultural advisory committee. Any questions?
Yes, John. Through Mr. Mayor.
Is that you, Raj?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, John, through you, sir, I have one simple question. You know, this whole idea of a race in 21st century, where all of us know that we have all 46 chromosomes, we have got the same blood, we have the, you know, all scientifically notions are there. Is it not an outdated and outmoded question itself? We all belong to the same human beings. I mean, and secondly, when you, if I read your Mayor of Minute, it's a sentence there where you mention that we do not know the extent of it. I've just read your Mayor of Minute. I mean, I raise a serious question of these issues, of racism per se itself. We are all human beings. How can we discriminate against each other?
I agree. Councillor Fernacook, yeah, and just one other thing, with the extent, we don't know the extent because we've had some reportings, and when we have our COVID-19 catch-ups with the federal member, Dr. Fiona Martin, it has been repeated in recent times on a number of occasions, the reporting of some of the racism that's going on. But you raised some good points, Councillor Dixit. Councillor Fernacook, you had a question.
I know that you've just answered the question. I mean, I really support. I think it's a terrific initiative that you've undertaken here. I just wanted to know through what channels that you're getting this underlying racism.
So, yeah, it was based on some of the feedback that we've been getting through our community services area, as well as the feedback we're getting from the fortnightly or monthly catch-ups, as they've now become, with the federal member. And it's not, it's really not highlighting that there is an issue, but it's pretty much just reinforcing our community's diversity and our commitment to multiculturalism, our harmony, our diversity, which is shown through, for example, on Saturday for those councillors that were at the library, through the works that we've done there with that redevelopment through Hornsey Lane. And it's really tying in with our past, present and future. Any other questions? Put them in it. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried unanimously. I'm going to get back to our apologies, because I've noticed Councillor Del Duca still isn't on there. So I've got a motion for an apology and leave of absence to be granted. It's been moved by Councillor Fernow Cook, seconded by Councillor Manor.
Councillor
Manor's here.
Oh, okay.
So for Councillor Del Duca, it's been moved by Councillor Fernow Cook, seconded by Councillor Manor. I'll put the motion, all those in favour. Those against, declare that carried unanimously. Now the general business items is item 83/20 is the first item, which is on page 7, which is Council's response to our progress update regarding the COVID-19, which is a report by the General Managers. Any questions, Councillor Fernacle?
Yeah, I'm happy to move it, but I've got a few questions with your indulgence through, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
I think the first one is that it's based on your Mural Minute before, it did speak about the Multicultural Committee meeting and about emerging issues, and I just wanted to know what the committee thought were emerging issues. That's the first one. I've got a few others that I'd like to ask too.
Okay, I might hand that over to the General Manager, who might be able to give us feedback. And Councillor Chan, are you still the chair of that committee? Did you wish to respond on behalf of the committee?
The committee has been sort of like a bit dormant for the past 2 months because of this COVID thing. The last time we did have a meeting, we were discussing all these promotions and so forth to council regarding the COVID-19 thing. And one of the things that the mayor mentioned was the racism issue that was being raised by some of the committee members. And also the members, in fact, we had a guest member from CAS as well. And Ivan Wong was the representative on that particular meeting. And he also raised the issue that some of the members who attended his CAS classes did raise the issue. So I applaud the fact that the mayor has put up the mayor minute to in support of this, the council effort to look into this racism and extent of racism within the community. And basically, MAC is still actively involved with all the other members from the ethnic communities to look at issues that could be impacting them, especially the business side as well. We did have a member, we do still have a member who is the chair of the Burwood Chamber of Commerce. And Bob Dong raised the issue that a lot of the businesses in the area are being impacted. At the moment, we still got those government subsidies like JobKeeper and JobSeeker going on. But the problem is everyone is aware that when the JobKeeper program could be terminating, because they extended that, could be terminating in March next year, the real impact will probably come in after termination of the program. So anything beyond March would be a big cloud sort of hanging on all those business owners, and God knows what is going to happen if the lockdown in whatever degree is still continuing after March, and the impact will be a big unknown and unpredictable until I would say 3 or 4 months after the termination of all those government subsidies. So depending on what the state and the federal government is going to do, and maybe to a lesser extent council could do, I mean, yeah, the people out there is a bit nervous as far as the ethnic communities and the reps are concerned. So apart from that, I don't know.
I, through you, Mr. Mayor, might just make a quick addition to that. Connecting to the feedback from the MAC, the Multicultural Advisory Group, our staff have now reviewed the possible reactivation of programs such as the Have a Go programs and things like the Playmen, although that's a little bit more sensitive, because they function effectively like a multicultural outreach service, whilst, you know, the excuse is and the activity might be knitting or arts or crafts or playing. The reality is these services function as a connection between council services and potentially vulnerable members of our community, particularly the ones from multicultural groups that sometimes suffer from isolation, or also elderly abuse and situations within their family networks that are not too healthy. So that's definitely something we're looking at doing in the next few weeks.
Okay, Councillor Fernow-Cook, you had another question?
Yeah, two more. Just regarding on page 15, we're tracking at 1.8 loss. I think just back onto what Councillor Chan was talking about. Are we still looking at a forecast possible loss of 2.6?
Hand over to Tomasa.
Now, Councillor, so the 2.6 referred to in the report was our original forecast for the first period of COVID. That was very conservative, as we admit in the actual report. The community and some of the activities that are obviously a source of income for us have continued at better levels than we originally expected. So the 1.8 is the revised one after the end of the financial year, and then obviously the next few months, it's another bit of an uncertainty. The projection I've indicated in the report, talks about a July to September, a little bit more money that we could be losing, but some of the trends we've seen on the ground are positive. Our activities, swimming pool and other income generating activities, are picking up. So fingers crossed, situation is stable and Sydney reacts well, we should be okay.
And just included in that, just to follow on through you, Mr. Mayor, and I've got one extra one. Does that include our forecast for Elsie Street tenancy?
No, originally they were not included. We purposely kept potential income from rentals that was still uncertain at the time out of this calculation. So anything that comes on top will be positive, of course.
And just a clarification through you, Mr. Mayor. So we've got the quarterly newsletter coming out in paper form, because I got one the other week, and we've still got the newsletter coming out, I think, in the operational plans. It's fortnightly. Is that right?
Martha?
I think Lawrence is here on the meeting. I might ask her to just jump in if she has more details. But I think the build updates is in the newsletter that used to be in hard copy. I believe is now being released as an electronic newsletter. I think on a monthly or every 2 months basis. And then there's some obviously additional communication specific to the crisis period and the pandemic, which is connected to the Burwood Cares programs that we've been running.
Okay, so have we, through you, Mr. Mayor, have we, because of the crisis, we're not putting our DAs, which are on public exhibition, well, usually it was submitted and approved, but we're not putting those on exhibition, we're not communicating that because the papers have been suspended along with the mayoral column. So have we got a policy on because that's a gap that we've got for community information.
I'll have a chat to the GM and maybe Lawrence. I know currently our DA's, in line with our notification policy, I believe, still gets direct mail, doesn't it? So they get a direct mail, which is the adjoining. The wider public sort of notification that sort of occurs through the mayoral column obviously is missing. It is on the website. So it is on the website. I would assume those that are getting the e-newsletter would get it. But look, take it on notice. Let's have a look. If we can improve that, why not?
Okay, great.
Makes no harm if we can get further notification out. It's always better.
Yeah. So I'm happy to move as recommended.
Oh, sorry. We've just got some more questions. Did you want to add something to Masa?
No, I think the councillors, you're all right in that it appears that the hard copy newspapers are probably no more. We won't see them come back. So we would definitely look at alternatives to reach as many people as possible with all our comms and notifications.
Yeah, okay. I don't think they're actually suspended. I think they're going to stop them. So they've approached us to do... I think they've approached us to take out ads through their online portals, but I think for that type of money, we were actually looking at our actual newsletters, which get, and obviously our direct mails, our e-newsletters. I'm not sure if we're doing, are we doing the update for the COVID-19 on the e-newsletter? So we're giving updates on that as well. So I think with the emergency powers of councils, I think part of that is to allow to increase. But we'll look at the DAs and how we're going to resolve that, because obviously that could lead into a more medium to longer term issue. Councillor Crichton, you had a question as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just on page 19, we talk about the Learn to Swim program at Enfield Aquatic Centre and that the number of enrolments are flat. I'm just wondering if we're actually planning an aggressive marketing campaign for our Learn to Swim program, given that Ashfield Aquatic Centre will reopen their $42 million project in spring. And I think as they butt up to our local government electorate, that we should just be really mindful that we have a really big new player on the block. And Jen, what are we going to do to deal with that? That's my first question.
Tomasa?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. That is correct. Yeah, we're mindful of the competition around us. We did steal a few customers from them when they closed down for their renovations, and hopefully those stay with us. I might take that question on notice, Councillor, only because I was talking to our acting Deputy GM this morning about having a meeting next week with our staff from the ESC to identify the way forward for the next few weeks and months and how to best position our programs to attract the our customers back into the facilities in a safe manner.
And secondly, just in the conclusion, we talk about as the situation improves. Where I stand at the moment, for me, a key barometer and checking on the actual social fabric of Bald is checking in regularly with Father James from the St Paul's Anglican Church to see how our community more broadly is travelling. And I met with him just about 3 weeks ago, and I was really saddened to learn that the demand for his outreach services, being the food pantry, shopping vouchers, prepared meals, etc., is growing steadily each week. He's now serving an unbelievable 450 people per week, which is a huge increase. And he also said that it's not just vulnerable people, but it's increasingly the middle class from around this area. A lot of families whose kids attend private schools are coming to him seeking supplementary food. So he's really overstretched. And I'm just wondering if there's any way that our council officers can keep in touch with him and that we as a council, as a collective, can really look at new ways to support him and his really valuable work for Burwood.
Thanks, Councillor. Yes, we. I believe our community services department actually does keep in touch with a number of the local not-for-profits as well as our local churches, and St Paul's is one of those. Did you want to add anything, Tomasa?
No, I personally spoke to Father James on Friday last week and just touched base with him and offered to assist in any way possible. Wherever we can, we send some funds. That seems to be the most effective, efficient way to provide support. But we also offered support for him and his team in relation to writing and preparing grants that they could access. So we've offered that, and we Miriam, usually from a community development team, notifies Father James and others of upcoming grant programs that they can access.
With regards to that, so Father James, our staff, Miriam was on one of the committees that he set up with regards to affordable housing and looking at more housing needs. I know the Uniting Church also on Board Road is running a number of programs, outreach programs. So are the Salvos, who are based in Burwood as well. And St. Nectarius Greek Church. The Orthodox Church has actually just started a program. They've been in touch with our community relations people to talk about how they can support some members or residents in need of the in the community, as well as Maronites on a Mission now, actually running a food service. So did you want to add something else, Tomas?
Yes, just highlighting, obviously, in terms of the homelessness problem, the latest development in our partnership with the Department of Justice and Communities and Wesley Mission that allows us to basically set up a flag, what they call a flag system, and which is proven to be very effective. And we have a dedicated person, and it's Miriam again, who has a direct contact with the department and with the mission, and they actually come out between 24 to 48 hours after the we identify a homeless person in the area, and they offer accommodation immediately, temporary accommodation, and then support them in gaining access to a more permanent accommodation. That's for the RAF sleepers. In the point of contact, they also offer them OPPO cards or mobile phones so they can keep in touch with them and throughout the process. So even just that, I think, would be a great support for all these service providers in the area and the charities that operate in Burwood.
All right, so that was moved by Councillor Furneaux-Cook, seconded by Councillor Crichton. Any other speakers against? Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried unanimously. Next item is 84/20, which is on page 24, which is the referral of the annual financial reports to the council's auditor. Do I have any questions? It's been moved by Councillor Manner, seconded by Councillor Crichton. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried unanimously. Next item is 85/20, which is 27. It's been moved. Any questions?
Yeah, I've got a few questions with your indulgence. Just on, I'll move it, but I've just got a few questions. On page 41.
Page 41?
I've had quite a bit of correspondence about particularly down around Henley to make sure with the amenities block and the netball courts, etc., that the community does want to become engaged as well, just to make sure that those will go on exhibition. And also for Flockhart Park, are we talking to the Cooks River Project people? Because, you know, they're looking at taking away the concrete canal and naturalising the banks. Are we thinking of doing that? That was the first question.
Yeah. I mean, we'll take that into consideration. I believe they're just, from what I understand, in design works, which will then obviously go out to consultation. But with the Cooks River Authority, I believe it is, we'll double check that. So you're saying they're doing a bit of a sort of taking out all the concrete and leaving it.
Across the other side, you'll see it at the Canterbury side, and all further up at Strathfield, they've got it, you know, read, so they've naturalised the banks, and it also helps with the flow as well, so it doesn't flood as much because it's, you know, much more porous.
Okay. With the amenities block, because you made mention of that, I believe because that came through, that council approved the tender for that, I would have thought that was Henley Park, but then we had the tender, so there would have been consultation on the amenities block because it came up to tender at council, didn't it? I believe so. Anyway, we can check that. Any other questions?
Yeah, just on page 49 with lighting, this is also regarding down near Henley. I mean, we've got some great, it's been so used, the walking track, but it's been my attention between Vision Australia and the playground on the Flower Power side, there's no lighting. So I'm just wondering, do we do audits of lighting? Obviously, it's difficult. I mean, I remember, John, we used to have the safety committee would do those sort of audits. Mm.
We'll put that on notice. I thought we installed some new lighting there as part of the upgrade, but we'll put that on notice, yeah. Have a look at that.
And on page 73, it's just about the materials that we're using, and it's under ensure sustainable materials are used to park amenities and facilities. I'm just wondering, are we using sustainable materials? Because we're doing quite a few refurbishments like Henley and Flockhart. So are our part, and I know SS Rock is doing quite a lot on recycled material. So are any of our materials going to be, you know, reused materials?
I believe from my last discussion, I think last week with John Inglese, when we were doing an inspection, this issue was raised, and I believe where possible they are, yes, and within reason too. So obviously that there's a checklist when they're going out to tender for these, whether it be the amenities block or actual equipment. It's then it's given a weighting, so it's split up into a weighting. What gets looked at is the sustainability of the material, the reusability of the material, obviously the cost, where it's made, the durability, safety, and everything else. So that is one of the criteria that does get looked at on, I believe.
So they've got a framework that they use.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it involves the reusability, sustainability, obviously that it's built in an environmentally friendly way. It gets an increased weighting if it's produced locally, I believe, and if it is an Australian product as well. And then it obviously has a weighting for cost, experience, feedback on the actual provider and so forth, I believe. I'm not involved in those weighting committees. They're done by staff. But when I ask the question on how they determine what gets picked, it's not just based on price alone. It's a number of these criteria. So I think it was only about a week or 2 weeks ago, I was asking the same thing. So that was the answer I was given. But if you want that on notice,
happy
for the GM to provide a bit more detailed update.
And just on page 97, I mean, this is a question, I suppose, that we'll have to come to with our events. Events,
yeah,
you know, like Sandarkin, etc.
Yes,
have we cancelled the festival yet? What are our thoughts on that?
Not happening. Yeah, we were hoping to. Well, one is the festival's not happening. We were hoping to push something and do something around Christmas time to have like a bit of a Christmas festival. That was when things were actually improving, so we're not sure where we're at. We might blow it back out, but the festival this year will be cancelled. Yeah.
Do we need a resolution for that through you?
Sorry. I don't believe so. I think it was taken.
Yeah, the cancellation of events has been made progressively through our crisis management team as the situation evolved and. The festival, I'm afraid, was cancelled a little while ago. And it was a good decision because it would be pretty much less than a month away now. So, yeah, it wouldn't have been a good choice.
And I can't see us doing a Christmas one. So it might mean, let's just see what happens. It might mean we do something at Easter or we'll just have to wait for next year. It's unfortunate, but it's just the way of the world at the moment. Councillor Crichton, you had some questions as well.
Thank you. Just quickly, the section which starts on page 69, Health and Sustainable Environment, I understand that Burwood Council is a financial member of the Parramatta River Catchment Group, our interest being the Cooks River frontage, which flows ultimately into the Parramatta River catchment. But can I ask for an update on our participation in this group and of any outcomes for Burwood? And I'm happy to take that on notice if you can come back, that would be great. Okay. And just on page 73, there's the last point on that page is all about ensure parks can be accessed by people living with a disability or impairment. Is there any way that we can look at the language that we use around people with disability or impairment. I think that the language now has moved on a little bit. It's all about inclusion. So it's about being inclusive, and you might just want to have a check that that's still the current terminology. I'd just hate to be offensive to anyone.
Okay, great. Thanks, Councillor. Yeah. So point taken. Any other questions? Did you have any other questions? No? Okay, so that was moved by Councillor Furneaux-Cook, seconded by Councillor Crichton. Any speakers against? Speakers for? Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? I declare that carried unanimously. 86/20, which is the fraud and corruption prevention policy, which is on page 99.
Move as recommended.
It's been moved by Councillor Furneaux-Cook, seconded by Councillor Chan. Any speakers? Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? I declare that carried unanimously. 87/20, gifts and benefits policy. While councillors are getting to that, I'm just going to raise a quick issue, because I was talking to the GM about this today. The limit that we've set is actually $30. The state limit now is $100. I've got a bit of an issue with my office, because not that we're getting inundated with gifts, but we do at times get a hamper, or what else are we getting, Tomasa? I'm not sure. Anyway, sometimes we would get a hamper, which is probably more than $30. The process we've put in place, which we haven't added into this policy, but we have an agreed process, and I'm going to ask, there's a section there that says the GM can make some minor changes if council approves. I want to add that one of those minor changes allow the office to, because we haven't really put anything around it, even though there's an agreed outcome. Is that right, Tommaso? What's happening is, for example, if we get a food hamper, that's we're redonating that to one of the local charities. We're actually then declaring it on the gift register. And now what we're doing is sending a letter to the body that gave the gift, advising them that we've redonated the gift, we're not accepting it. And now we've also added an extra layer of getting a receipt from who we're giving it to. So for example, if we're giving the hamper to St. Paul's and their charity, their pantry, for example, whoever the body is that sent through the hamper, and we're not getting many. My only issue is technically, if we're going to keep that $30 limit, we're breaching the policy. So I don't know how, and I haven't had a chance. We sort of had a bit of a chat about it, I think, yesterday, but we haven't thought about how we can add a clause in there to sort of put that process in to actually make that a policy. So will councillors object? One is to have the limit in line with the state policy, I think, of $100. But we can keep the overall policy at 30. Councillors also objecting if they want to be involved in a similar type policy, where if they get a gift, that we run it through a similar type process with Nihil at the office. Any feedback?
I just through you, Mr. Mayor. I think it's only $30 if you keep it. I mean, the whole thing is that you're on whatever gift you get, you're on ratepayers' dime anyway. So I mean, really.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, if that's the case, that's fine, because I'm not keeping any of the gifts.
Exactly.
So, okay. I'm just putting it on notice that I'm just going to add in there that the GM formulate a policy for the mayor's office and/or councillors, if they wish, in re-gifting gifts. That, you know, up to the state limit, whatever that is, just in case. I don't want to be in breach where, you know, in 6 months' time, I get a notice given to me saying, well, you redonated a gift that was $60, which shouldn't have been accepted, for example. I just want to make sure we're doing it in line with the policy.
For you, you can't we're not in breach of a policy if we go under. I mean, originally it was $50. We're not in breach. It's in breach if we don't do it. The value is irrelevant. You can't.
No. Yeah, I know that. And what I'm saying is, for example, if I accept the gift of, and it's $60 now, policy says 30, even though I'm re-gifting it, I just want to make sure I'm not in breach of the policy. So I'm just going to ask the GM to look at it. That's my only concern. I'm not, whatever gifts we're getting is in, we've been re-gifting anyway. Did you want to add something to
that? Just I think we can add some wording around the disposal of the gifts received. And that way we've got a set procedure that if anyone questions, we can refer to. But in general terms, I would support particularly for the staff, the $30 limit is a safe way to go, for sure.
Through Mr. Mayor, because this has come through the audit committee as well, right? We kind of discussed it. So through you to the general manager, why the difference between $100 and the $30? What was and particularly as you just said, your impulse is particularly because it covers staff as well as council. So where is your impulse going with this, the $30?
Is that to the GM?
Yeah.
Tomaso? Look, I'm happy to give you my version. Then we've got Elizabeth, who's our interim ombudsman, and Tanya that might want to add to it. I mean, it was a bit of a surprise, the state government increasing the threshold to 100. That's always been a lot less than that. But the flexibility for councils and other agencies is to basically choose where we want to sit, but it has to be obviously below that threshold. It cannot be over. Many organizations see it as zero. That's a clean way, and there's no misunderstanding. We've been at 30 for a while, and we obviously think that's pretty reasonable. The higher the amount, of course, the higher the risks and the possible issues with perception. But I don't know if Elizabeth or Tanya, you want to add anything, please jump in.
Yes, hello, Mr. Mayor and councillors. Look, just following on from what Tomaso has said, it's really about reducing risk to staff and reducing risk to councillors. And it's about reducing the degree of reciprocity that staff and councillors feel, should they be given a gift of value. So the Office of Local Government, I think, surprised most people when this code of conduct came out with the lift in the value of token gifts and benefits from $50 to $100. And it is within your ability to set the dollar value of token gifts and benefits at any figure as long as it is below $100. So you're not in breach if you choose to make it 50 or 30 or zero. It's totally up to you. There is, in fact, a section in the draft gifts and benefits policy that is before you that deals specifically with gifts and benefits that are offered to councillors. And what the draft policy proposes is that anything over $30 is refused and sent back to the giver with a letter that sets out the charities that they might wish to donate the gift to. Now, clearly it's up to you to determine whether that is the wording you would like or whether you would like different wording.
Can I just add something? I think I know why. I remember now why the gifts the limit was increased. I think it was based on feedback from the City of Sydney. I think there's a number of actual like business lunches, like business type groups, Chamber of Commerce lunches that obviously councillors/mayors might be invited to, where other people are actually paid attendees, but because the councillors or the mayors are either presenting or they've been invited to the luncheon or the conference or the presentation, they didn't know how to declare it as a value. So many were actually saying they can't attend. So how does that affect, for example, a councillor that gets invited? Well, for example, sometimes the local government association has a luncheon where they have a presentation, and I might get invited as the mayor, and they're charging everyone else $100 to attend. how do I then attend? Technically, so I don't know if there's a section where we can distinguish gifts from invited or being a guest at a body, you know, a corporate body's luncheon. I'm not talking about private lunches where you might be invited by, you know, a group or a property group for lunch. That's totally separate. I'm talking about sort of corporate lunches or corporate type events that you attend. How do you handle that? That's where this whole issue came about. I remember this now because I actually saw it on the news. So I don't know how we can, and I know where Elizabeth's coming from, and Tommaso. I think, yes, with regards to gifts, I understand that. I've got no problem in having a zero policy and re-gifting that. But how do we ensure that councillors that might get invited to a Chamber of Commerce luncheon or like I get invited to St. Paul's sometimes where they have a musical and, you know, they've charged people $60, $80. I'm invited as the mayor. So technically, am I accepting a gift or am I going as an invitee?
It's very tricky.
Yeah, it is tricky. So I don't know if we can sort of adopt this as is and then maybe have the GM or defer it and have the GM look at it, maybe adding a section in there that gives the flexibility for councillors to still have the ability to attend a corporate function or a luncheon if they're invited without it causing – because technically – I remember this now because there was – major issues at the City of Sydney, which caused major problems where councillors and the mayor were refusing to go to events by corporate organisations because they felt that they were in breach. Elizabeth, do you have any ideas?
Well, look, I think that there are a couple of approaches. So the Code of Conduct, I don't actually have the wording in front of me, Tanya might. The Code of Conduct specifically excludes hospitality associated with work-related functions. The difficulty comes when those functions are ticketed functions. And if they are, you know, ticketed functions for other invitees who, you know, would pay more than the limit that we're putting in our gifts and benefits policy. Now, the other issue is that this section of the Code of Conduct is called personal benefit. And so it's a question for councillors to determine whether or not what they are receiving is actually personal benefit or whether they're going in their capacity as councillors and that the gift or benefit they're getting is actually not a personal gift or benefit. So, you know, you actually really need to think about every gift or benefit that's offered to you, you know, within that framework. But look, I understand where you're coming from, and you know, perhaps what we need to do is a bit more work to make it clearer in the gifts and benefits policy what the options are.
And through you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I think it's very tricky. I mean, I think that you can't refuse if someone gives you a bunch of flowers, and say at the award ceremony for, you know, Rotary. Mm. You're not going to throw it back in their face, but you might then hand it to, you can't refuse it, but you might not keep it because it's not yours to keep. It's an ethical question. So I would tend to think that we do need to do some work on this to understand it as a leadership group.
Well, it's to make it also. It's really to guide you to ensure that you're not doing the wrong thing. Because, I mean, all the councillors, I think, every year get invited in July to the Historical Society's Christmas in July, which is a ticketed event. So well, do we...
Is I have that, to pay?
No, but I mean, like, I've been invited. So, I mean, like, it's...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's... What do you do? Like, we get invited, for example, St. Joseph's at Croydon, and you know, at times have events where around their feast day.
Perhaps through you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I mean,
I understand. Sorry, Councillor, that where Elizabeth is saying, well, that's not technically might not be a personal gift, but then maybe we should clarify those type of situations in the policy to give us some guidance.
Could we do? I know at the audit committee that the staff have gone through this through training and ethical leadership training. I would suggest that this would be a great prism to do that through, because it is, particularly for you, it's a minefield that you have to tread carefully all the time. And for counsellors and for new counsellors as well, who haven't, I mean, we're in a bit of a bubble at the moment, but as you say, you know, you get invited to these things, and it's difficult to know who's paying or not paying and whose dime it is.
Well, sometimes you're not even aware that it's an actual ticketed event. You turn up and then you realize it's been ticketed. So I'm not sure. Is there a time frame to actually have to adopt this at this stage, or should we bring it back next month with a bit more thought? Is there a time frame on it?
If you're happy for us to adjust some of the wording around the actual disposal of the gifts, or maybe copying some of the bits from the Code of Conduct in relation to hospitality and the official functions, we can include it. And then I think Councillor Fernacook is suggesting maybe a refresher or a discussion, like facilitated training discussion around that minefield.
Yeah, I think with gifts, as Councillor Fernacook mentioned, I think if it's, even if it's over $30, if you're actually giving it away, but maybe we should include that in the policy then.
I'm happy the way I think, Elizabeth, there isn't a statutory requirement to have it approved today, right? Otherwise you can...
I would like a section in there that actually outlines how we're giving it away. So we've got the protocol set up now in the Mayor's office where we've got the acceptance, the declaration, the letter sent to the sender of the gift saying thanks but no thanks, and it's been redonated to a charity, and the charity giving us a receipt that they've accepted it, so it covers it all. It'll be great if we have that built into the policy as well. So then if councillors want to use that method as well, they can through the office.
Tanya was there as well. Did you want to add anything?
I'm not going to get Tanya to add anything just yet because we're going to defer it. So sorry, Tanya. So there's no, I think the councillors are happy to defer it, get you to work on it a bit more, then we come back. How's that, councillors?
But do we have to do it? Do we have to have
there's
it?
There's no time frame. There's no time frame, I believe. Is that right, Elizabeth?
Not for the gifts and benefits policy. Okay. However, councillors have adopted the Code of Conduct, which has a limit of $30 in it.
Oh, we can. That's all right. We can.
That's okay.
The $30. It's more about the. We can come back and revise that once we've made some beefed up the gift policy. So
We've got a gifts policy in place as well. So it's not as if we don't have a policy. So it's just getting it right. Okay. So it's been moved for a deferral by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Crichton. I'll put the motion, all those in favour. So it's been deferred to come back to hopefully next month, if we can, to take on board for the general manager and staff to take on board some of the feedback and comments made by the councillors in beefing up the policy.
And can we add about the discussion and training?
Yes, and to look at further opportunities for training and discussion around the policy. I'll put the motion, all those in favour. Those against, I declare that carried. 88/20, which is the adoption of Code of Conduct and Procedures for the Administration of the Code of Conduct.
Move as recommended.
So it's been moved by Councillor Fernacook, seconded by Councillor Chan. I'll put the motion, all those in favour. Those against, I declare that carried. The 89/20, which is the Audit Risk and Improvement Committee Charter 214. Was anyone here to present on that? Was Elizabeth here to present on that or no? No? Did you want to add something? Who's adding? Councillor, had a question? Councillor Fernacook?
I'm on the committee, so I prefer someone else to move it. Okay. But it's just basic changes because of COVID that we me to not replace the...
Well, you can move it since you're on the committee. So it's been moved
by yourself. Okay, well, I'll move it.
And it's seconded by who else is on the committee? Councillor Dixit on the committee.
All good, yeah.
Yep, so it's been seconded by Councillor Dixit.
If I may, just, Mr. Mayor, just to confirm that the report is presented to you to allow us to extend the two current independent members on our committee, Sandra Mulder, the chair, and Daniel Carbone, for a further 12 months because their term was about to expire at the end of this month. And for continuity reasons and the current climate, we felt that it was the most appropriate thing to do.
So it's been moved by Councillor Furneaux-Cook, seconded by Councillor Dixit. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? I declare that carried unanimously. Next item is the local government conference, which is 90/20. That's been cancelled?
No, it hasn't been cancelled.
It's going to be online, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be online. The cost hasn't... I've just put out an email. It just came, last Friday, the board decided that it can't be as a in-person conference. So it's gone online, but council's still encouraged to put up any motions and to nominate delegates. So we could do that, but I just asked about the cost because it will be a revised cost. Obviously, we're not going to have problems with accommodation and travel. Mm-hmm. We could still say who we were going to have and then do the cost. I asked if the early bird is still there, but...
I think we registered anyway.
Trying to work it out.
Oh, we had booked, yes. Okay, how many voting delegates do we have? Three, do we? Okay. So who's going? One, who's going to be there? So you're going to be there yourself, Councillor Furneaux-Cook?
Well, not at the Hunter Valley anymore.
Nah. So you're obviously still part of, so you want to be a voting delegate?
Yep.
So Councillor Furneaux-Cook, Councillor Manner, are you attending? And Councillor Crichton? Councillor Crichton, you attending? Oh, okay. Okay, so can it be, I'll suggest myself, Councillor Manner, I can't see any other councillors sticking their hand up, and Councillor Furneaux-Cook with Councillor Crichton as an alternate. Is that correct? And the GM will register as an observer. Any objections to that, any of the councillors? I can't see any objections. So it's been moved by Councillor Furneaux-Cook, seconded by Councillor Manner. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against? I declare that carried. Investment report, 91/20. Any questions? Been moved by Councillor Manner, seconded by Councillor Crichton. Put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried unanimously. The Bellwood Local Traffic Committee, any questions? 229, Councillor Crichton.
Thank you. I have two, actually. The first is about the Strand at Croydon, where they're looking at putting in, or the committee's agreed to put in the bus service in the evening, or from 12 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm just wondering, are they existing bus stops? And when it says, I think it's up to 30 metres in length, is that on both sides of the road? In front of number 3 is the news agency, 8 to 10 is the Tokyo restaurant and Strand Cellars. But I'm just wondering, like, are we allowing for up to 4 buses from 12 midnight till 5 a.m? And if so, have all the residents been notified?
Can I just make a note? Sorry, I just realised the Strand. So I've got to declare technically it's a pecuniary interest, even though it's not affecting, it's not actually affecting in front of my property, but I own a property there at 22 The Strand, Croydon.
Yeah.
So I'll just make a note. Sorry about that. So 22 The Strand, Croydon on the local traffic committee. Regarding the Strand night bus.
Yep.
But I believe it's going in front of 8 to 10. Okay. All right, sorry. So, Councillor, your question.
So I've just got a few questions. Yeah. So it says it's 30 metres. I'm wondering if that's 30 metres on both sides of the road. So the news agency at number 3, and then 8 to 10 Tokyo Restaurant and Strand Cellars. So is it up for 4 buses or 2 buses?
Not sure. Oh, I thought there was night buses there already, to be honest.
There are bus stops, yeah.
The night bus stops, you never see them, but is it, are we aware?
I don't know. Because it must be something new if it's come before the traffic committee. I just want to make sure that the residents, a lot of people live above the shops, that they're okay with it, that they know of it. I think it's just a courtesy, that's all. And I hope that the buses don't sit there with their diesel engines running.
Yeah.
They typically come as a request from RMS or Sydney.
They've come from bus services operators.
Okay.
And it's from midnight to 5 a.m.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's really funny. I mean, I've always seen the bus stops there. I've never seen any buses, but... Okay, can we take that on notice?
Yeah, of course. Maybe they're going to do a lot of night work along the railway and they need the buses. I don't know, but I just want to be clear, just in case we're asked. The other one is just about the Strathfield post office. So it's relocated, but from my thinking, it used to be in Strathfield local government area. So now we've picked up an additional post office, which is handy in a way. But I'm wondering if that is a franchise of Australia Post, and if it's a franchise, why isn't the franchisee paying the council for the 3 spots out the front or the spots out the front?
Good point. I would suggest it probably is a franchisee.
Because that's prime parking there.
It is. And it's three paid ticketed parking. So is there a process that we have in place for these requests or?
Typically, requests from Australia Post are supported because it's an essential service they deliver. But I will check whether they have other commercial sort of activity that they can pay us.
And why 3 spots? Like, is it? We don't even know if it's busy enough yet. Like, you might, if you're going to give them a spot, you might give them 1 spot.
Seems generous. Mm. And in the report, doesn't say whether the PO boxes are relocating. Just said for people to stop and pick up their parcels. So from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. And that seems a lot. 6 days a week.
And you know the thing that sort of makes me question these type of issues is many of these businesses are now franchisees, which are great because you want to support businesses too. But in saying that, you're getting these developments built, which I understand that the post office is going in a new development from what I read. So the parking that we, and this is why, you know, we always have this debate about the VPA parking. This is why I'm a fan of actually having them give up the parking and we take it and pay for paid parking. And I'm saying this to the councillors, it's because we get situations like this where you've got a builder or a developer that's built the building, he's leased out the commercial space. Where's the parking that's supposed to go with it? They keep it themselves. It's supposed to be public space.
Yep.
So, I mean, when you put businesses in those developments, they've got to have a level of public space. So where are our conditions of consent that say, well, you've got to provide public parking space in that development for these shops that people can access, that's not behind a barrier that needs to be buzzed in? So these are the problems we're having. So can I suggest we defer that one for further investigation and then we can bring that back next meeting?
Yeah, I think it's important.
Any other questions? So, you had a question too, Councillor Furnacook, is that right?
Yeah, I just had 2 questions. Just regarding the submission that the speaker at the opening of the council meeting made and council's view on that. And the second question was, last month I brought up an issue about continued problems with the corner of Liverpool Road and Colbert. And I'm just wondering when that will be brought forward to the local traffic committee.
Okay.
So can Mr. Mayor, can I just ask you?
Hang on, Councillor, sorry. So your question, sorry, Councillor Manor, just one sec. The second question has to be taken on notice to follow up the last question regarding Cool D's and Liverpool Road. And the first question was with regards to Brighton Street, is that right?
Yeah. And what was the reasoning? But because obviously the resident has a concern that there's ample parking, but my understanding from the committee, the traffic committee, that it's more about sight lines, is that correct?
That's from what I read. And at the time in the actual committee meeting, or when we had the discussion, it was about the sight lines, yes. It was more about the sight lines. So on Bryant Street, I think what was happening was there's a business, like a car hire type business, that was parking vans right up along those driveways so people couldn't see. So they haven't eliminated the parking. They've set it back, I believe. So they've made some area there no parking. And I believe they pinched a spot or two on Croydon Avenue as well. It's for sight lines, for people to get in and out of those driveways, that's all. So what happened is those issues were raised. They were then given to the traffic guys. The traffic guys, I believe, then and went and did an investigation. So any other questions?
No, it's just that there was quite a few people who were at the as long as that's communicated to the community who are against it, because it seemed to be more about this discussion was, yes, they've got plenty of parking, but it's more a safety issue, isn't it?
So that needs safety, to be, yes.
That needs to be communicated.
I believe, I remember signing some letters that I saw that came in from the GM's office, because some of those objections came to myself, and we actually gave them those reasons. I just think there's a bit of a personality clash between some people still there that are still hung up about the actual whole development that happened there years ago, and have still sort of got that. And one of the other ones, which is the one in Brighton Street, I think, which is fair enough. I think one of the fellows that's parking his vans there just has too many cars, doesn't have enough space in his home to park there. Obviously, it was across the road from his home, so just means he's got to park him a bit further up now, but so there's still unrestricted parking. So it's just a bit of give and take from everyone, just to make it more of a, I guess, an inclusive area for everyone to sort of get along and be good neighbours. I don't think anyone's trying to hurt anyone else. I think it's just, I won't name the resident in Croydon Avenue. I actually had a bit of a chat with him because he rang and we had a discussion. I explained that at the time, but once this report gets approved, I'll write to them as well and just explain that again. And Councillor Manor, you had a question.
Yeah, I just noticed item 22/20 Weldon Street, Burwood. My home is there, so do I need to declare anything in relation to that item?
That's your call. This is right up on the corner.
It is. That's a traffic.
It's not in front of your home, but
no. But
you may want to just declare that you live in.
That's exactly right. Yep.
So we've got that. Is there anything else? Any other questions? So do I have a mover for the report to be adopted? It's been moved by Councillor Chan, seconded by Councillor Crichton. I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried. Now, information items 26, which is the Greener Public Spaces pilot project, which was a response to a Merrill Minute. There's also item 27/20, which is the landscaping of development sites, which also is a response to a Merrill Minute, and the revision to soft landscaping requirements, which is item 28/20.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, question, Councillor Crichton.
Thank you. Just with regard to the last two about the landscaping, soft landscaping is one, and then landscaping of development sites. I suppose I'd just like, I don't know, maybe a workshop or a briefing on our definition of landscaping. Does it now encompass all external elements, all features like plants, drinking fountains, street furniture and paving? Because I think it's really important to get it right. And also, does it all tie in then with the proposal that we had a couple of meetings back with the Design Excellence Review Committee? Does that tie it all together? Is that where we review all the external features? Is that what it is?
Did you want to add, Tomasa?
Well, the design excellence has certainly got an element of landscaping included in it, but also a lot of it will be looking at the architectural features of buildings or future building setbacks, and you know, opening up a ground level. We should definitely have a discussion so that there's a common understanding across all councillors and staff in relation to landscaping and what that includes. I'd be more than happy to organise.
I think with regards to those Merrill minutes too, like the one on the landscaping of development sites, and the one also of landscaping requirements for single dwelling, I would have thought when we asked for a report to come back to council, I would have thought like for it, like a formal review of the policy with a council decision. It doesn't really feel like that's happened. So it's a bit disappointing to be quite frank, because the one with development sites especially, it's really important, because like one of my questions without notice that I've got coming up is to talk about, you know, we've got a public arts policy that need to be conditioned with development. So to date, how many have we had? There's been a number of developments that have gone through. How are we addressing the need for them to provide the public? I know we dealt with one in Clarence Street because I was on the panel, but what about the other ones that have come through? Is that being addressed? So I just would have thought with the landscaping and on the single dwelling, I think when we move motions or mayoral minutes, there's got to be a formal process where it comes back. When you're asking for a report back to council, it doesn't mean that if the councillors want to debate the issue, that's the process. It's not about, okay, review the policy, whatever the staff come up with on the policy, and then just put it back. Like, that's something to be considered, and it might be that, but it needs to be determined as a policy decision by council, I think, because you can bet your bottom dollar we'll get complaints about this again, because nothing will change in that policy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's just a point.
I tend to agree. I think the vicinity the proximity to the review of the LEP and the DCP particularly, I think has been the temptation for staff to say we'll address everything at that point, which is only a month or two away.
I'd be surprised if we deal with the LEP review if we can get it done within 12 to 18 months. I'd be surprised. I mean, from what I've historically seen when you're doing an LEP, the last one took 8 years, I think. Anyway, Councillor Fernow Cook, you had a question?
Just a question on the issue, particularly for the pilot project, and congratulations to staff for getting that up in the mayoral minute. Just, do we have, through you, a biodiversity policy? Because we're talking about landscaping and the urban canopy and reducing the urban heat map, but we don't seem to have a strategic framework to see about what are our kind of percentages, and what are we aiming for a biodiversity? So do we have a policy on biodiversity is my first question.
No, I don't believe so, but we should get one.
Okay, so I'll present that as a motion next meeting.
Yep, and the biodiversity is quite important, and And I know there's a, you know, there's a bit of a debate with regards to whether we use natives or non-natives. But I think if you actually go across, and I think as part of the LSPS, they were starting to measure some of the existing trees that we actually have to look at council's, you know, or the area's heat map. And while I'm a great supporter of, you know, the native trees, I think it's also important because one of the common feedbacks I've been getting is, yeah, the natives are great and no one wants to get rid of the natives, but we should start putting in a diversity of species as well, which will allow some increased colour and different colour. And while the native sort of landscaping around the old library or council chambers, which is now the new one, you know, was you know, they were native type plants. Just to, you know, to some people, you know, the common feedback I kept getting was why you've got all those weeds overgrown around the library. So now obviously we've changed that. I think there's been about, I think there's more plants now. I think there's over 3,000 plants that went in there alone. And I believe there's a combination between those being natives and non-natives. And
I think, yeah.
To provide a bit of diversity. So, but yeah, but I think you're right. You probably should look at some type of biodiversity.
70, policy. 20 or 30 or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's just so we can, it's also because the natives provide, obviously, habitat.
Oh, no doubt, no yeah. doubt, and it might also mean, and it's good to have this debate, and like I said, I'm not anti-native trees. When we put in the policy and the whole intent of the 500 new trees, which I'm going to come back with another Merrill minute to extend that for another 500 trees, is it wasn't to diminish the importance of the natives. It's, we've got plenty of natives around at the moment, and sure, we could have more. The only issue is we wanted to also put a bit of colour into the LGA. So there are a number of trees that flower as well that are natives, and some that aren't, that we obviously, Joe Lilly and our arborist team went out and they actually decided on a number of plants that they could mix through. And we also wanted to put some landmark trees, like some of the parks we've added the flaming Illawarra trees, for example. There's been an increase in cherry blossoms, the crepes as well. Like you drive through parts of Croydon on the inner west side, which are tree lined with crepe myrtles and cherry blossoms, which just look amazing. It doesn't mean that every street in the municipality should have that, but it'd be a nice feature to have some streets that are tree lined like that that currently don't have trees and that, you know, need an addition of trees. I know some of the trees that we added in streets that had existing trees, for example, that had the bottle brushes or the gums, that we actually planted the same tree in those streets. The sad thing is that we actually had three cherry blossoms go missing in Arara Street, and we've had, I think, five go missing on Shaftesbury Road. So it looks like someone's pinched them, which is really disappointing. So we're going to leave those sort of spots at this stage and put some signage up for people to, like we would, because it's tree vandalism, really. So it's quite disappointing. Any other questions? Councillor Crichton, you had another question.
Sorry, just one really quickly, just about the trees. Do our residents get to nominate their street frontage for a street tree? Can they ring in?
Not at this stage.
Okay.
Not that I believe, no. We've had...
Yeah. If a resident wants a tree out front of their place on the public footpath, can they nominate their location? Do we have that facility? Or you...
No. We've had some requests that have been attended to,
okay.
Through the office, that I've seen letters. Some we can't attend to because there might be services there.
Yeah, we don't have a formal program, but if someone has a wish to have an extra tree, we'll definitely consider it.
Okay, yeah, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks. That's all.
Any other questions? Okay. I believe there were information items. Now, item 29/20, which I think is a decision, which is on page 250, is to add, I think this was raised via a Merrill minute to look at, or a notice of motion to look at ways to actually have bottle bins attached to existing bins. So there's a motion there that council approved the once-off and additional ongoing maintenance cost expenditures detailed above, that council authorised the GM to proceed with the six-month trial, that general manager report the results back to council. So that's to add an attachment to our existing waste bins in our town centres, which allow people to dispose of bottles, glass or plastic to increase recycling. So it's been moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by, did you have a question?
I'm happy to, but can we just make sure that, because I don't know if you have it, but I've got people coming up and down my street going through my bin and neighbours' bins.
Oh, yes.
So we don't want to actually have it as a commercial enterprise, even though it is probably very enterprising. So I think we need to be mindful that it doesn't, it's, you know.
People don't go through it.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah, I think the ones that they add, from what I understand, is you can just get the bottle in. Is that correct? You can't actually open it. Anyway, but that's point taken. One of the things I noticed that people are doing now is, I guess I'm sort of doing this myself, is we're actually recycling the bottles and cans in a separate bin at home. And then we actually put them in a waste bag. And we noticed some charities are actually taking those. So some of the local charities, churches, you can actually drop off your bottles and cans and they go and recycle them through that scheme.
So just a question. Sorry.
Councillor Manor, you had a question?
Yeah. So if we're saying we're going to put that on our bins, couldn't we also include a, let's say, a little bit of an advert to say that your can goes to a charity or a within your area, you're helping certain, you know, people with whatever it is that we can attach, and that way there's not, it sort of takes away from people just taking it, you know, breaking into it to steal it, other than say, okay, we're going to put our cans in here. We're helping a good cause.
Well, I don't, yeah, thought. Let's, yeah, okay.
Just a thought.
Point taken. And Councillor Crichton, you had a question?
My final question, I promise. I'm just worried about the aesthetics of it. It's in such a key location. I hope it's not going to look clunky. I would have loved to have seen a photo of it.
Well, maybe we'll get the GM to give us a memo with an update of what it could look like. So that was moved by Councillor Manor, seconded by Councillor Furneaux-Cook. Was that right? I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Those against, I declare that carried. Item 30/20. There's no information. That's the mayor's discretionary funds. And 31/32/20, which is petitions and questions without notice. Questions without notice, councillors? Yep, Councillor Crichton.
Thank you. Just one question. Does council currently have a policy around power poles, particularly in our town centre?
Okay. What's just to be a bit more specific. You're on mute.
Smart poles, the aesthetics. Would really love to be trying to get all the power lines underground.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Councillor. Yep. Councillor Furneaux-Cook?
I've got three. The first one's regarding the wall collapse on Liverpool Road.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the same company that was involved in the collapse on the other on Liverpool Road and the one on Burwood Road? And do we refer these incidents to the newly appointed building commissioner? That's the first question.
Mm-hmm.
Second one is, what is council's policy on storage trailers and boats? You know, they're not just trailers, they've got storage in them.
Mm.
because I had a resident complain. I had a look. They're permanently parked on the street.
Right?
This is on Burwood Road between Bligh and Lily Street, Burwood High. Yeah. So I don't know. I know we had the advertising policy, but I don't know if we've got all the and the last one is it's just following up on my motion on the access to if a high rise has a fire, the two trucks, the two, you know, aerial appliances at Glebe. Have we had any further communication with the state government, an indication that there'll be ability to have an aerial appliance in Burwood to ensure the safety of Burwood residents?
Yep. Any other questions, councillors? I've just got a question with regards to the general manager or staff to provide an update any recent development approvals by the New South Wales Planning Panel or by council staff or the local government planning panel that took into consideration council's policy to provide some form of street art, and if so, what was the outcome? So that's my question here. Any other questions? There being no other questions, I declare the meeting closed at 5:29 p.m., I believe it is. Thanks, councillors, for your attendance, and have a good evening.